This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. This week, the Trumpet staff is putting together our March 2019 print edition. We have an important feature story from Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry. America is being besieged economically. This is also the subject of his Key of David program from this past weekend. It's a very important story about this world's largest trade bloc that is forming between Europe and South America. And this is something that Herbert W. Armstrong specifically forecast would happen decades ago based on biblical prophecies. Today, we're going to look at the relationship developing specifically between Brazil and Germany as a new Brazilian president seeks to reorient his country away from economic deals with China and to move those toward Europe. We'll talk with Trumpet writer Josue Michels about that development. And meanwhile, as that's going on, China is making some dramatic moves to strengthen its navy, which has significant implications regarding world trade as well. But it certainly shows just how determined China is to tighten its grip on Asia. We'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Jeremiah Jacques about that. And then later on in the program, we'll have a conversation with holistic nutritionist Jorg Mardian about the dangers of pharmaceuticals. Drug companies claim to be able to heal disease, but in many cases, they cause disease and even death. The fact is, prescription drug abuse actually kills more people in America every year than heroin and cocaine combined. Jorg has some thoughts about the fundamental problems with taking the medication route to solve our health problems. Very interesting segment there. And I'll conclude today's show by talking about the importance of keeping your word in what you say to God. We're going to start, though, with this story about China. Beijing is undertaking a whole series of projects that show how determined it is to rule the waves, as we will now hear in this report from Jeremiah Jacques.
The People's Liberation Army Navy, there in China, is rapidly transforming into a more capable and more lethal 21st century force. And several projects are coming online in 2019 and beyond that will significantly accelerate that transformation. First, there are the aircraft carriers. In early January, China's first domestically designed and built aircraft carrier, which is the Type 002, returned from its fourth round of sea trials. This new carrier is China's second one, and it has now completed around 90% of its testing, so it's expected to be commissioned into service in the Chinese Navy in April of this year. This is a 65,000-ton vessel with advanced radar systems that can carry 32 aircraft, and once it enters commission, this carrier will significantly enhance China's ability to project its power in the disputed territory of the South China Sea. And a third Chinese aircraft carrier is already being built as well. This third vessel, known as the Type 003, has a displacement of 80,000 tons, which makes it considerably larger than China's first two carriers, and it makes it the world's largest non-American warship. It's also significant that the Type 003 will incorporate an electromagnetic catapult-style aircraft launch system, which boosts the longevity of the aircraft and allows for quicker launches. So that's a major improvement over the ski jump systems of China's first two carriers. And this Type 003 is expected to be launched as early as 2022. China's ambition to build a world-class navy with blue water capability is no secret, and the Type 002 and Type 003 aircraft carriers, as well as two other carriers set to come online by 2030, represent major advancements in that direction. The second big development in the Chinese Navy is the Type 005 destroyer. The Chinese have had the Type 005 in the works since 2014, This is a precision guided missile destroyer that is intended mostly to accompany China's aircraft carriers. And since the Type 005 is designed with considerable versatility for long-range air defense and for anti-surface, anti-air, and anti-submarine warfare, analysts expect them to significantly boost the Chinese Navy's capability. The first two Type 005s were launched last year from their dry docks in Dalian, so these two are advancing through the testing phases, and they are expected to be transferred to the Navy around the middle of this year. China also has six other Type 055s in earlier phases of development right now, with plans for two more. So that brings the total anticipated number to 10. The third major Chinese naval project in the works is the Type 054B frigate. 24 of these are currently on order, and they are multi-role warships with a displacement of 5,000 tons. And the new model is a major upgrade from its predecessor, the Type 054A, mostly due to its enhanced anti-submarine warfare capabilities and its improved hull shape, and most importantly, its all-electric propulsion system. That makes it the first Chinese naval warship to field a system of that kind. And the combination of this electric propulsion system and the Type 054B's larger size means quite a bit more fuel and equipment can be loaded onto the ship than onto its predecessor. That translates into considerably enhanced combat capability. These frigates are able to travel at up to 30 knots, and they have a cruising range of more than 7,000 nautical miles. Reports say the order of these 24 frigates to China's Navy will be completed by 2025. The fourth development to watch is the KJ-600. This is a fixed-wing airborne early warning and control aircraft that's being developed for use on China's aircraft carriers. The KJ-600 has been called the aircraft that could help China's Navy rival America's. This aircraft could be thought of as an equivalent to the U.S.'s E-2 Hawkeye. They're both airborne early warning and control aircraft, and these are essential for aircraft carrier groups because they give them the ability to detect incoming threats and manage complex operations. In the past, all of China's airborne early warning and control aircraft were too heavy and slow for use on ski ramp-equipped aircraft carriers. But the KJ-600 is considerably lighter and more powerful. The KJ-600 can man a crew of six soldiers, the pilot and five others, and it's equipped with a larger, active, electronically scanned array radar than its counterparts. So having them on board aircraft carriers means the carrier groups will be able to detect incoming threats earlier, and that ends up really increasing an aircraft carrier group's defensive and offensive capabilities. The KJ-600 is expected to enter service in the early 2020s, and China's development of this particular aircraft reveals a lot about Beijing's ultimate ambitions. Dr. Colin Koh is a research fellow at the Institute of Defense and Strategic Studies in Canberra, and he spoke about this in an interview last year with the South China Morning Post. He said, quote, "If China's carrier group is designed to operate closer to its coast, it would rely on shore-based early warning support. But with the carrier-based KJ-600 planes, it implies that these carriers are designed for distant sea operations." End quote. So the KJ-600 shows that China's looking further and further abroad in terms of the range of its naval power. And these aircraft will really expand the range of the People's Liberation Army Navy. The fifth development is the Type 075 Landing Helicopter Dock, or LHD. These function as amphibious assault ships, and they have a displacement somewhere between 36,000 and 38,000 tons, which makes the Type 075 the world's largest non-US landing helicopter dock by a considerable margin. The Chinese Navy has ordered three of these, which will complement their existing fleets of amphibious transport ships, and each one is able to carry 20 armored vehicles and four helicopters. So these are expected to bring the Chinese Navy very near to the U.S. Navy in terms of capacity to incorporate helicopters into naval operations. China's first Type 075 is expected to launch this year and to be entered into full service sometime next year. And the other two are apparently not far behind. China is also developing fifth-generation carrier-borne fighter jets. There are two competing designs in the works right now, one in Xinjiang and one at Chengdu. And the Navy has reportedly not yet chosen which of these will be mass-produced. But both models are believed to be both ski-jump-capable and catapult-compatible, so that they could be used on the Navy's two existing aircraft carriers, and also on the more advanced Type 003, and even on the more advanced carriers that will follow in the years ahead. The prototypes of these fifth-generation carrier-borne fighters are expected to take their maiden flights in the next 5 years. These projects represent major advancements for the Chinese Navy, and they're happening fast. These armaments will all significantly help China in its goal of asserting greater control over the South China Sea. And that's really where the rise of China's Navy takes on importance in terms of Bible prophecy. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has written about China's increasing control over the South China Sea and how it connects to Bible prophecy. In an article from our July 2016 issue called China is Steering the World Toward War, he wrote, quote, "The American military is retreating, and other great powers are coming in to fill the vacuum. China is intimidating the nations of Southeast Asia into submission to its will. Everything is headed in the direction of war." Mr. Fleury explained that his understanding of China's rise is based on Bible prophecy. Deuteronomy 28:52 is one of the main passages on this topic, and in it, God warns the nations of Israel that if they reject him, he will transfer control over the world's strategic sea gates to their enemies. It says, quote, "And he shall besiege you and all your gates until your high and fenced walls come down wherein you trusted throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God has given you." Mr. Fleury explained in his article that this is a prophecy for the modern day descendants of Israel, which mainly means America and Britain. Today we see China taking control of the South China Sea and many of the sea gates that allow access to it. And this is happening in locations that just a few short years ago were under the control of the U.S. and Britain, which shows that this prophecy in Deuteronomy is now in the process of being fulfilled. The rapidly rising power of the Chinese Navy, as evidenced by the numerous powerful projects coming online in 2019 and beyond, could now speed up the fulfillment of these prophecies even more.
Thank you very much, Jeremiah. There is a lot of compelling information in there. You know, what strikes me in listening to that is I've heard some criticism of the United States when you look at the exorbitant military expenditures that go toward very expensive hardware like aircraft carriers. There are people that say, well, essentially the United States is prepared for the wars of decades past, but that's not a cost-effective way of putting money toward your military in modern warfare. It definitely seems like China believes otherwise.
It does look like they believe that aircraft carriers are far from obsolete. You know, they've got three very near to completion, with at least two others, slated for entrance into the Navy within the next decade. So the Chinese apparently don't think that the era of aircraft carriers is over.
Right. Let's talk more about its strategic ambitions. When you're describing this, how this might accelerate the fulfillment of certain prophecies at the end of the report there, I was just thinking about how Britain, when it was at the height of its imperial power, that Britannia ruled the waves, and then there came a point when it could no longer afford to do that. But talk about why naval power correlates so closely with national power.
Sure, yes. Well, in the case of China, at this point, they only would like to be a regional naval power. They don't have global ambitions, at least not in the immediate future, possibly within their 2049 plan. That's their 100-year anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party and the nation as it currently is. But in the near term, at least within the next decade, they would just like to be able to secure their own coast, you know, and to prevent a potential U.S. naval blockade, which they perceive as an existential threat. You know, if the U.S. were to block off the first chain of islands there, it could potentially prevent China from being able to bring in oil and gas from the Middle East, which they're dependent on, and from being able to export their products, which they do. It's a waterway through which an unbelievable amount of goods flows. So their naval power is intended to mostly secure their interests in that regard. But we do see the Chinese looking at, you know, Djibouti. They recently celebrated the first anniversary of their first overseas naval base there in Djibouti in Africa. And they're quickly developing a base in Gwadar, Pakistan as well. So there is this slow motion spreading that we see, an expansion of their power. And all of these aircraft carriers and these destroyers, frigates, these will be crucial for turning what has been a regional navy into a blue water navy that can, you know, if not the world, then at least the Indian Ocean will be within China's sights.
Well, it does. I do wonder if there is a more aggressive global view kind of behind all of these developments. When you look at the way that they're thinking, you'd have to say imperialistically about Central and South America, about several places in Africa, several places in the Middle East and like Pakistan and as you were describing, and then even the trade that they're trying to create with Europe, it does seem like if you look at what was it that motivated Britain to have such a strong naval power and policy in making sure that they had a larger, more powerful navy than, you know, the next two countries combined. When they were securing their imperial interests globally, it seemed like it really was the naval power that was the means by which they were able to do that. And as you're thinking outward, you know, you're thinking beyond your own shores and how do you secure those holdings around the world. It does seem like China is very much in that that model right now, that they're not only are they trying to expand trade routes and just expand economically, but they also want the security that comes with being able to safeguard that through naval power.
Yes, that's a huge part of this. And you know, China is furious about what it calls the century of humiliation by Western powers, by Britain and France especially, but also the United States. They make no attempt to you know, disguise how eager they are to bring an end to the era of U.S. supremacy. And they think that the Middle Kingdom, China, should be the next global hegemon.
Yeah.
And their navy is the main tool that they think they'll be able to use to accomplish that.
So you've written or you've put together, or you're putting together, I guess, a mini documentary about this subject, and we'll definitely direct listeners to keep an eye for that on thetrumpet.com. Any other material that you would suggest people look at if they want more information about this subject?
Yes, I would just reiterate the recommendation to read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury's article from our July 2016 issue. It's called China is Steering the World Toward War. There's a lot packed into that article, and it really puts all of this in context in a powerful way.
All right. Very good. Thank you. We've been talking with trumpet writer Jeremiah Jacques about really extraordinary developments in the Chinese Navy. He's put together a mini documentary for thetrumpet.com about that. You can watch for that on the website coming up soon. Thank you very much, Jeremiah.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
This past weekend, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury gave a television program called America is Being Besieged Economically. I'd encourage you to go watch that program. It's about how the European Union plans to forge the largest trade bloc in the world with South America. We're putting together a new Trumpet edition. This is the March 2019 edition this week, and this is Mr. Fleury's feature article in this issue. In related news, the political scene in Brazil is changing under its new president, Jair Bolsonaro, and Germany is looking to use this as an opportunity to strengthen its relations with the South American giant, Brazil. To talk about this, we have Trumpet writer Josue Michels. Hello, Josue.
Hello there. Good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. So tell us about this new government, the new president in Brazil.
Yes, so in 2019, things are changing for Brazil because the new president, Bolsonaro, has made many promises that are contrary to what Brazil has been doing so far. Brazil's largest trading partner is China in the moment, but Mr. Bolsonaro campaigned on his promise to reverse that. He wants to bring Brazil away from China because many in Brazil believe that China is exploiting Brazil, and the elites really hate that and want to forge new relationships with the US and also with Europe to really change that course. And the new president is really interesting because he wants to make Brazil basically great again. He had that same motto as President Trump. He wants to resurrect Brazilian strength. And the economy in Brazil is already the eighth largest in the world and overall the largest economy in Latin America. And what two things that are really important to watch here is that he wants to strengthen the security in Brazil because Brazil has the highest murder rate and lots of crime in the country that really needs to change for Brazil to be able to make use of its vast amount of resources.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing, too, that struck me, and Mr. Fleury talked about this in his program, is that Bolsonaro is Catholic,
yes.
And that seems to be at least in part informing his view that they need to essentially transfer a certain amount of allegiance or economic ties from China over to Europe. Is that right?
Yes. So from his perspective, China is not a very trustworthy partner. Mm. They're not a partner at all, but it was necessary for Brazil to trade with China because Europe always had other trading partners. But with the US leaving the European market more and more, Europe opens up now to Brazil. And Brazil is actually has the largest Catholic population in the whole world.
Mm.
So they don't want to trade with communist China, which is very atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
So those religion and also the language, Portuguese, connect with Europe much more.
Right. So, yeah, we'll talk more about this maybe a little bit later on, but the cultural and religious ties between Europe and South America is definitely something that we've drawn a lot of attention to over the years. Even Herbert Armstrong talked about that some years ago as being a major aspect of what it is that is going to link those two together when you looked at from the lens of both history and Bible prophecy. But let's talk about, before we get to that, I just want to talk about what's happening with German policy that is bringing them around to where they really view what's happening in South America and Brazil in particular as such an opportunity for them.
Yes. So first of all, Germany is quite worried with its trade relationship with the United States of America. And ever since President Donald Trump has been inaugurated, they knew that relationships with America and Europe are changing. They're putting tariffs on car imports and other things that the American businesses are flourishing more. So Germany urgently needs a new trading partner. And Brazil offers just that. Because what the new president, Bolsonaro, is doing is he wants to increase the security forces, as we mentioned before. That means he needs Some are actually worried that he might turn Brazil into a military dictatorship because of what he promises. But Germany is not so worried about that because for them it seems like that's a perfect investment opportunity because most of European imports or Brazil's imports from Europe are machinery, they are weapons, they are those exact things. So for
which Germany is very strong and a major exporter of exactly those things.
Yes, exactly. And China is also in that field. But the quality of European security equipment far surpasses by that China's imports into Brazil. So they're really looking for a double win here, Germany does. The more Brazil can increase their security forces, the more able they will be to harness their resources as well. So it will be like a slope that goes on and on and on, and it is beneficial on both sides.
So the needs of Brazil under its new president and the economic ambitions that Germany have seem to be aligning in quite a remarkable way.
Germany really needs imports from Latin America in as far as agriculture goes and resources go, because many of the resources in Europe are already exploited. So they really depend on imports, which Latin America can offer. And Latin America, they don't produce their own arms. They don't produce much of their own security system. They don't have the technology that Germany has and Europe has. So in a sense, they are perfectly fit together to have that growing relationship. And as the Brazilian economy grows, the more and more they need those machinery from Europe. And the more the German industry grows, the more they need the resources from Brazil to be able to produce all what they are producing.
The point that Gerald Fleury made with respect to this, and you can tell by the title of his both Key of David program and the article that he has written from that, America is being besieged economically. To see these strengthening ties between Europe and South America, and here we're talking specifically about Germany and Brazil, there's a strategic aspect to this that really should be of concern to Americans as we look at the overall point that Gerald Fleury was talking, largest trade bloc in the world between this bloc of European nations and this bloc of South American nations. Maybe you can just talk about the strategic implications of what's happening here.
Yeah, and that really should make headlines in America. Mainly, they don't see that Germany has a strategy behind it. But they even said they don't seek a trade agreement with U.S. President Donald Trump anymore because he exited the climate change, the Paris Climate Accord agreement and other things. And he doesn't want to have the German car imports. And all those things point to the fact that Germany needs different trading partners. And if you look what Germany is doing now, they've just formed a trade agreement with Japan. And they want to form a trade agreement with Latin America also. But they don't want to form a trade agreement with the United States of America. Now, Brazil in the moment, they still seek relations with America. But once you have a trade agreement between the Mercosur trade bloc, the largest trade bloc in Latin America, in the EU, the tariffs will be so low that trade will be much cheaper for Brazil to export to the European Union than it will be for the United States or for China to import the Brazilian goods. Mm-hmm. So that will really transfer the resources Brazil has and Latin America has to Europe away from the United States and away from China.
So the immediate impact could be just creating more adverse trade conditions for the United States with respect to Latin American and even European markets. When you look at it from the standpoint of Bible prophecy, it's actually more than just business that's being stripped away. There's an aggressive and confrontational aspect to the trade policies that these nations are putting together that's actually aimed specifically at undermining the United States.
That's right, and that's where you have to understand the European goal to form an empire. And of course, if you understand a nationalist mindset of any leader, they want their nation to be the greatest nation in the world, and the EU is coming close to that, but in a moment, as long as the United States controls world trade, they will never be able to surpass the United States in that goal. But as soon as they can center the world trade around the European Union, then they can bring that superpower down and establish themselves as the superpower. And that's actually exactly what we see in Bible prophecy. For example, in Isaiah 23, it says that Europe will form a marketplace for the nations, which means that trade will go through Europe, whereas in the past it has gone through Great Britain and the United States. Mm-hmm. And that shift is prophesied to bring America down, and that's exactly what the European Union is planning to do in a moment.
Yeah, if you look at it just not even looking at the Bible prophecies, but you just consider the strategic implications of this massive trade bloc forming, you can see that there would definitely be major ripple effects that would affect the United States economy. Americans don't seem to be particularly, I guess Donald Trump seems to be more than any president in recent memory, just aware of how the trade policies of other nations, they're not aimed at just creating prosperity for everyone. They really can be used as a major weapon against the United States that are specifically aimed at undermining American economic supremacy. But then when you look at those prophecies, it just adds an extra dimension to that. And you mentioned the prophecies in Revelation that talk about how economically dominant that European empire is going to become. And those have to be some of the most striking prophecies in the entire book. I mean, when you're getting into the later chapters in Revelation, and you see how dependent the merchants of the earth become on this power and the kind of resources that they're dealing in that clearly come from nations all over the world, it's extremely striking and very powerful. And you put that together with these trade relationships that we see developing, and it gives quite a stunning picture of what we can expect to see in the time ahead. Well, we've been talking with trumpet writer Josue Michels about the relationship between Germany and Brazil as part of this larger picture of the trade relationship developing between the European Union and South America. He has an article up at thetrumpet.com today, 2019 Germany Eyes Brazil. You can go check that out. And do you have any other thoughts on, if anybody wanted more information about this, what they might want to go look at?
Well, Mr. Fluey's latest Key of David is definitely a must watch if you really want to have a deeper study into those prophecies and how it is designed to bring America down. We have a book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet, and Isaiah's End Time Vision, which really explain those prophecies in detail and in the context of what is ahead for America and what's beyond those prophecies even.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
If you believe the television and radio ads, you think we can heal diseases and live longer if we just medicate ourselves. The truth is, the claims of the pharmaceutical industry can be extremely misleading. And one truly alarming aspect of this story is that prescription drug abuse actually kills more people in America every year than heroin and cocaine combined. Is medicine really something we should place our faith in? To talk about this, we have from his office in British Columbia, holistic nutritionist Jorg Mardian. Hello, Jorg.
Hello there.
Well, let's just talk about the scale of use of pharmaceuticals. How hooked on drugs are Americans?
Well, right. That's the staggering question. The United States really has the most expensive healthcare system in the world. So I'll give you an example. In 2016, it spent $3.2 trillion on healthcare. That's a number so large, it's just difficult to grasp. And I was reading an article in the Washington Post, and it said that within a decade, close to a fifth of the American economy is going to consist of healthcare.
That's staggering.
Now, it is. Now, it doesn't even get better when we look ahead. By 2024, and we're just throwing numbers out here that we can't hardly comprehend. They say about 4.6 billion retail prescriptions will be filled. And that's going to average roughly around 14 for every man, woman, and child. That's a big number.
So do you have a sense of how much of that is drug use and prescription drugs?
Yeah, those are pharmaceuticals that they're talking about.
So you're saying the overall cost of the healthcare that doesn't you're talking specifically about the drug use.
Yeah, well, the healthcare system itself will be $3.2 trillion, but the prescriptions themselves, there's going to be about 4.6 billion prescriptions filled.
That's amazing. So let's just talk about some of the side effects of these drugs and some of the problems that result from that. What are the health hazards?
Well, there's so many. It's incredible. There's a book, it's called The Powerful Medicines, The Benefits, Risks, and Costs of Prescription Drugs. And he says there's three phases or three angles to a drug. There's the effect, what it does to the body, then there's the hazard, and then they talk about the economic impact. So they're the most medical common intervention, the drug. But with injuries and adverse drug events, you're looking at a scale of about 106,000 people per year that are going to go to hospital with getting injured and dying from this. So
106,000 people, 106,000 people who are hospitalized because of prescription drugs each year.
That is correct. You know, and if we take into account prescribing errors and overdose or self-medication,
right,
it would make legal medications that you get from your doctor prescribed the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S.
That's
so
amazing.
What's really, really concerning is that this doesn't receive a lot of media attention or government scrutiny. And, you know, perhaps some of that is because the pharmaceuticals, when people die, it flies under the radar because there's a similarity to illness or other factors. So you could have heart problems because of a pharmaceutical, and it will be, you know, on your death certificate would say heart disease or something. So it looks similar, but it might be the medication itself. In other words, it's so similar that there's nothing to see here and just kind of move on because one melts into the other, right?
Yeah, there has been a certain amount of attention given to the opioid crisis and the pain medication that people are taking and getting hooked on that tends to lead toward more serious drug use, that tends to be a gateway to opioid use or more potent opioids. But you're talking just broadly speaking, there's like you mentioned three or four potential problems here, being prescribed something that actually is going to have an adverse effect. It's the wrong medication for someone, or even combinations of drugs, or someone who is self-medicating. They're just taking medications based on a Google search or something.
Oh, absolutely. You can get medications on the internet now. A lot of people share medications, or you get cross prescriptions from different doctors, or you might share a medication and get a prescription from another doctor. I mean, doctors really have no idea how many drugs or pharmaceuticals people are on today, and they're just as perplexed as anybody else with all these symptoms. And then, of course, one pharmaceutical has a set of symptoms, and then as soon as you get into 2, 3, and 4,
right,
it's like a cascading waterfall, and then you try to treat those effects of the pharmaceuticals with other pharmaceuticals. And it's just horrendous, and there's just no way to stop that. So we're looking at diseases that are really pharmaceutical diseases as well, mm-hmm. a large portion of society.
Let's just talk about the corruption within the industry, because this is something that occasionally makes headlines, and there is some exposure of, say, the level of money that the pharmaceutical industry has in government. They have a very strong government lobby. And also, it seems like there are a lot of cases where you have pharmaceutical companies that have close relationships with the doctors who are prescribing these drugs. Maybe you could just talk a bit about, say, some of the conflicts of interest that you might see within the industry.
Right. When I was doing my research on this, I mean, I came to the conclusion that if you put the pharmaceutical industry beside the mafia, you'd see very little difference. Mm. So it's all based on money. And there's a book called Bad Pharma by Ben Goldacre. And he says there could be as much as $1 trillion involved annually in this business to all sources. So that's a lot of money. And that's going to cause a lot of corruption. Mm-hmm. So he says drugs are tested by the manufacturers themselves. They're poorly designed trials. They're unrepresentative of the patients that are actually being looked at or that the drugs are for. And the techniques are flawed. And then not only that, they exaggerate the treatment benefits. It's just a breathtaking scope right at the very beginning when drugs are made. And they said that a lot of this is false, misleading, exaggerated, and just all outright wrong. So drug development really has become a race for the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, we're looking at fraud and kickbacks and price setting. We're looking at bribery, intimidation. The marketing methods are highly aggressive. The sales activities are illegal. I mean, if you look at the mafia and you said this is what the mafia does, it would be very similar. You know, let's look at the FDA, the oversight.
Yeah,
they're supposed to have the oversight, right?
That's meant to protect us from some of the abuses that you're describing.
That's right. But the experts with drug company affiliations, they fill a lot of the advisory positions at the FDA. There was a USA Today investigation. They found that half of the experts on the FDA advisory committees have financial relationships with drug companies. I mean, it's staggering. Imagine the conflict of interest there.
Right.
And so if you add in the federal and the civil lawsuits that these drug companies go through because of drugs are the trials are bad and the billions of dollars in government sanctions, the fines and the penalties. I mean, these mean little to a company that makes $25 billion a year and you fine them $3 billion. Hmm. So it's the bottom line is these corporations aren't there to help us and they don't love us. Mm-hmm. They're there to make money. And if you look at the end result, like as a consumer, will your doctor help you? You know, what can your doctor do? Surely he's compassionate. But then when we look at the pharmaceutical sales reps that go up to these doctors and say, look, these are the drugs we recommend for these kind of conditions. These guys are trained in tactics. I was reading in the New England Journal of Medicine. These tactics are some of the most potent brainwashing techniques in the world. And so, every one of these is used to manipulate physicians.
Huh.
So what this casts doubt on what physicians really know. It casts doubt on the treatment decisions that they make, and it casts doubt on the drugs that they prescribe that may or may not kill a person.
So there's a whole lot to chew on what you just said. I'm the overall point seems to be that when you see that commercial and you see, you know, happy people rollicking and enjoying their families and in good, strong health, and you hear the people who are saying, you know, if you have this problem, this disease, this medication might be right for you, to have a certain healthy skepticism about that, and then listen real closely when they start listing all of the side effects at the end of the ad, that you might experience this or that problem if you take this medication. Do you have any other, practical advice for the individual who is either on medication or maybe multiple medications or considering going that route?
Well, practically any symptom can be caused or worsened by drugs. Drugs aren't the problem. You know, the more drugs we're on, the more problems we're going to have. If we look at the cause, then we can say that, you know, why are we actually going in that direction?
Yeah.
And we're not really making really good food choices and lifestyle choices. And then what happens is we end up on a bad path. We follow this course and then we end up looking to medicines as kind of a pill for our ills. Mm-hmm. So we don't put in the work at the beginning of the journey, and then we want to look for a quick solution at the end of the journey. It's just it's kind of a blind groping way to look at dealing with things that are going to have catastrophic consequences. You know, drugs can cause diseases themselves. We know that. I mean, there's a host of diseases, depression, psychosis, dementia, Parkinson's. Hmm. We have to be careful. In real life, things work differently than drugs. We can't look at this picture that they paint for us and it's an outright lie. We really have to control our health by eating the right foods in the right amounts. And Mr. Armstrong always said, you know, he had the laws of health, and he said, uphold cleanliness and hygiene. You know, do we look at that properly? Do we look at getting sunshine and fresh air, sufficient exercise, rest and sleep, and then avoiding injury? Mm-hmm. And as well as the mental attitude. I mean, do we look at those factors and say, these are really important so that I can avoid the end result of having to gravitate towards pharmaceuticals? Mm-hmm. If we do the thing proper in the beginning, if we uphold these laws of health, we won't need the pharmaceuticals.
So when you're having some disease, some debility, some problem, try to pinpoint the cause. What is it that you've done to create that condition, and try to correct that or start there rather than just seeking an easy out with some medication?
Absolutely. When I counsel clients, I always ask them, what have you been doing? Let's go over it. Let's make a list, and then let's eliminate what we can pinpoint to be a cause. And, you know, up to 70-80% of the time, it's very easy to find fault and to take that out, and then you see the body start to recover.
Yeah. Well, very good. We appreciate that. We've been talking with holistic nutritionist York Mardian about the dangers, even the deadly dangers, in prescription drugs and pharmaceuticals. You can keep your eye on thetrumpet.com for an article from him on this subject. As always, York, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's time for today's last word.
Are you a person of your word? A person's reliability in carrying out his agreements, commitments, promises, it says a lot about that person's character. It's critical that we put a high value on being people of our word to other people. But I want you to think about another aspect of this subject, and that is whether you keep your word to God. Do you ever talk to God about areas in your life you'd like to improve, how you want to love your family more or overcome some fault or sin, whatever it might be? It's important to pray about things like that. But how well do you follow through with those commitments? God keeps track of those statements. Ecclesiastes 5 actually says, "Be not rash with your mouth, and let not your heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven and you upon earth. Therefore, let your words be few. When you vow a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay that which you have vowed. Better is it that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay." We need to take care in what we say to God, because he holds us to account. That's not to say you should never make a commitment to God or that you should just carefully say everything with non-committal wording. It's just that when you talk to God and you commit to God, you really need to strive to diligently follow through, to make a permanent change, to keep your word to God. Does God consider you reliable? It's an interesting question. When he tells you to do something, maybe he shows you something that you need to change through your study of the Bible or prayer or a spoken message that you hear, a conversation or an experience that you have. Can he count on you to follow through with that? We're all accountable for what we learn. Herbert W. Armstrong talked about this in his book, The Incredible Human Potential. He said, "The human man is literally made from clay. God is like the master potter forming and shaping a vessel out of clay. But if the clay is too hard, it will not bend into the form and shape he wants. If it is too soft and moist, it lacks firmness to stay put where the potter bends it. The human clay must be pliable, must yield willingly. Yet if he is so lacking in will, purpose, and determination that he won't stay put when God molds him partly into what God wants him to be, too wishy-washy, weak, lacking root of character, he will never endure to the end. He will lose out." God has to be able to rely on you and me to stay put when he shapes us. That root of character that Mr. Armstrong talked about, it's within us. That root of character to do as God instructs, it's a necessary ingredient for God to be able to shape us. Now, the common attitude is to make excuses when you fail to overcome. But as the saying goes, an excuse is nothing more than the skin of a reason wrapped around a lie. We all need to strive to become people of our word before God. Now, that starts by asking God to set your priorities. God knows what you can handle. He doesn't expect you to do more than you're capable of. So ask him to influence your decisions on what to focus on, what to pour your heart, your effort into, what to use his spirit to accomplish. Don't make rash promises to God when it comes to specific commitments like, well, I'm going to approach that person about that problem, or I'm going to strive to help my child to overcome this weakness, I'll sacrifice this or I'll do that. Don't just let those kinds of statements lightly tumble off your tongue in prayer. Ask for God's guidance, carefully consider what needs to be done, and take your word to him seriously. And then keep track of it, because we're human beings. We tend to forget. When we get up from our prayers, we can become distracted. Something else comes into our mind, or we get overwhelmed by circumstances. We've got to record those commitments, those projects, those plans. Make note of that sin that you're specifically besieging. Write down those virtues that you want to grow in. God remembers those commitments, and we need to remember them too. One final tip: only change one thing at a time. Real change in our lives requires focus. If you try to change too much at one time, then that focus is diffused, your efforts are ineffective. Choose the most important thing, commit to it, and keep at it. In the forefront of your thinking, keep it there day in, day out, until that becomes a new habit. And a good rule of thumb is to not change not go after more than one per month. Keeping your word, following through with your commitments, it's hard. It's a battle. We can't win that battle with our own willpower, but we can keep our word to God. We must keep our word to God by using His power. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that'll do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send comments on the program today by emailing us at letters@thetrumpet.com. I really want to thank my guests on the program today, Jeremiah Jacques, Josue Michels, and Jorg Mardian. Thanks to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. I'll leave you with this thought from Kurt Vonnegut. Another flaw in human nature is that everybody wants to build and nobody wants to do maintenance. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.